God's involvement in psyche?
Well, I mean, we're talking about two things. We're talking about it's the psyche where that sees the
right.
vision.
Yeah.
Okay. The vision itself is communication with the anagogic context that releases the vision. In other words, the psyche is not a self-enclosed reality. We are self-transcendent beings. We are in relationship to. And one of the dimensions of reality that we're in relationship to is the divine. And communication of the person with the divine will release the anagogic symbol. And I would take that as an instance of an anagogic symbol. It's a symbolic experience that gives a call.
It's possible that lots of disjunction within ourselves and within culture results from culture's loss of some of the means, the original means, or the meaning, you know, the loss of the larger symbols.
Yes, I would certainly want to maintain that, you see, and I think I'm not alone in that. Heidegger's desire to retrieve, and he speaks in most of his later works of the necessity of the retrieval of the experience of being, which is at the origin of Western civilization and the Greek philosophers, and pre-Platonic philosophers, Heraclitus, Parmenides, and so on. In fact, he spends most of his time with those people that would tend to neglect it. Back retrieving even that. Vogelin is doing the same thing through all of his work, retrieving the core experiences, particularly again of the Western tradition, but in his later work he's moving beyond that. But most of what he's written about is Israel and Greece. The experience and the meaning, the experience and the symbolization have both been lost. And that's what he's trying to retrieve as a way, as a contribution to saving civilization. Not the only thing, and that's not the tradition. It's not a traditionalist sort of. He's not harking back, wanting to go back to the Greek city state.
Yeah. Is that what you would have protest for them because of the loss?
Because of the loss. Because of the deculturation. Now, in other words, for most of these people, one problem that I have with Heidegger is that all of modernity is nothing but deculturation. I don't think we talk of the rise of modern science as being aberration.
That's
a tremendous development. But what's going on in modernity is a dialectic. It's a dialectic. The Frankfurt social theorists talk of the dialectic of enlightenment. The advance that takes place in knowledge. In constant warfare with the deculturation that is going on in the amputation of the tradition.
To answer that question, I'm thinking of someone like Yeats, Irish poet, who, in the same time when psychology is starting, the beginning of this century, takes the Irish imagination back to the Celtic myths, uses images and symbols that don't really mean anything, but just dovegrave fairyland, and talks about the past. Things that you can sort of pull out of the psyche to make the Irish conscious in a way that he can maintain his balance.
And just to add one more point on that, it would be, as far as I'm concerned, the source of the loss is the replacement of integrity, which you find in both Greek philosophy and the Judeo-Christian scriptures as the criterion for authentic human being, with expediency in the myths of power that are anticipated, for instance, in the Prince of Machiavelli's Leviathan's Hobbes and so on, which is the operative philosophy of modernity, the expediency and the interest of domination over nature and over man. Okay. Paul Ricoeur is the third author that I've used, and again, first of all, he helps with number B here because he speaks of the overdetermination of the living symbol. It is over-determined. And what he means by that is it points to something other than itself, and it draws me to that something other. Draws me to it. And how is it related to conceptual thinking? In Kerr's famous statement, which you may have heard, the symbol gives rise to thought. And it does so over and over and over again. The symbol gives rise to thought. Not the symbol is captured by thought, but it's food for thought. Over and over and over again. Alright, then Ricoeur also adds a fourth element to the living symbol. A symbol that lives in the psyche of the human person. Symbol, well, I'll give you his expression first and then unpack it. The symbol expresses an archaeological, teleological, unity intention. Archaeological, teleological, unity. Attention. That is to say, the living symbol is rooted in material nature and the past, but points to the ends of the spirit. And the possibilities of the future. It's rooted in the both material nature and the past experience, whether it be of the person or the culture or the race. But it points to the future and it points to the ends of the spirit, to greater meaning, further truth. New realization of value or whatever. For instance, in, to use here a dream symbol that I've used before, the maternal, the helpful maternal figure that appears in your dream as an archetypal symbol. It's taken from your past experience, from your childhood. And only because of that childhood where you experienced the mother as giving nourishment and support and warmth and security, can that symbol function at all in your psyche? My friend with the, who had the dream, you see, never in his dreams did his mother function as the symbol for the nourishment in the psyche. His aunt, his grandmother. His mother could not function in that way. His experience wouldn't allow it. But anyway, that helpful maternal symbol, you see, is taken from nature and your own past experience, but it doesn't mean that. It's not a return to the Oedipal situation. It's pointing to the possibilities of the future. Psychic nourishment is on its way. The archaeological, teleological unity intention, rooted in the past, pointing to the future. At this point in time, the living symbol. And then I want to add a fifth element, which I haven't found in any of these people, and it may be in somebody's writing, because it seems to me to be rather rather clear. And I know, I would say this, that this fifth element is certainly true of living symbols in, at the archetypal and anagogic level in dreams. Namely, and I'll neutralize a religiously charged word here, because it's not always religious, but they are sacramental. In this sense, they give what they symbolize. And as I say now, this is true certainly of the archetypal and anagogic symbols as they appear in dreams. Whether, how much you can extend this over to artistic experience, I wouldn't be able to say, because I'm not versed enough in that area. But my friend's dream of the healing didn't just point to healing. He gave it. He was healed with that dream. That was it. So it gave it. It gave what it symbolized. the helpful maternal symbol in the dream doesn't simply point to nourishment, it's already being given at that point. What is symbolized is being communicated at the same time. And that's the sense in which I'm using the term sacramental here, and the sense in which we talk about the sacraments as giving what they symbolize. This
I thought it was just dreams signifying what has happened, not that it's actually.
No, but it's in that. It's in that experience that it actually happens. You see. It's in the dream experience that the healing takes place.
Well, wasn't
it's like, it's been on the way, and his feeling up to that point was something important is going on. But this is the moment.
Well, isn't all of that progress the healing?
Oh, sure.
The whole thing? And that just at the end, as the dream signifies that the healing is complete. The actual healing has been
dream,
going on for
the
months.
Dream is the completion. The dream is the completion, you see, of that movement that's been going on. And it's the start of a whole new set of occurrences. See. But it's the completion of these occurrences. And that he said the first 26 years of my life were over. That's what he said. So, it was something new in that experience. Now that's an extreme example of the point that I'm trying to make here. But psychic energy is converted, is changed, is transformed in the actual production and release of the symbols. See? Production and release of the symbols is the transformation. So, that's when you're dealing at least with the archetypal and anagogic depths.
Would we say to, you know, just in our phrasing, because it indicates that in the dream or symbol, given what it symbolizes, the gift could still be refused?
Oh yeah, and that's the point I wanted to go into here, particularly with that. You see, that the gift has got to be owned and it has to be taken up, and you've got to move on with it. The transformation can be lost, put it in another way. Conversion, just like conversion. Conversion is not salvation. Conversion is the beginning of a movement that, if it's persevered in, will lead to salvation, not salvation. And the same thing is true with this. You know, they had these bumper stickers, you know, I found it. One time I saw somebody with a bumper sticker, I lost it. You can lose what has been given. And to take this example of my friend, you see, his whole life, he's got to work out by taking that dream up into consciousness, particularly up into the fourth level. First 26 years of my life are over. What am I going to do about that? There's a whole new foundation, which means a whole new horizon. Possible now, but he has to freely enter into that horizon. I'm assuming. Yeah?
I was thinking about your last, your contribution to this description of the sacramental. I think of Eucharist as a special symbol in which the is the symbol. I'm wondering if there are any other in that class. To me, that's the conversion, but the meaning of the thing is the highest.
There's a lot of possibilities, I think, that are opened up by what you're raising. I really haven't thought it through in those terms yet to be able to say. I think have you read Carl Rahner on symbol? Because I think that Rahner's moving in that direction, you know. The real symbol.
If I'm doing a study, I haven't been for a long time on the icon, which is sacramental.
Yeah.
But it's somehow sacramental somewhere between the Eucharist and what it's saying.
Uh-huh.
It gives what it symbolizes, and in some sense it is what it symbolizes, but it isn't including the thing, the Eucharist. It seems to be a whole change.
Yeah.
Proper literature of reconciliation would be exactly as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
The fact is, in
general,
this is
what you
do is give them something.
Yes.
section.
Yeah. Sanctification of things. Now, with all of this, you know, I think there's a whole renewal of sacramental theory and praxis that can come out of the kind of notion of symbol that we're building. That's why Stephen just suggested in terms of the practice of the reconciliation, right? But to have that kind of sensitivity as you are engaged in the rituals.
Yeah, it's a negative side. I've been gathering ammunition for a long time because which attempts to create the symbols, the private symbols, that are claiming to communicate the experience without any reference to any kind of common meaning.
I would recommend for you, and not just for you on this, but I think I would say maybe for you in particular, Northrop Frye in The Anatomy of Criticism traces five stages of literature from the medieval down to the present time, and they are roughly the anagogic, romantic, tragic, comic, and ironic. You know, this is a phase through which literature passes, as he says, and then once you reach the ironic, the whole thing starts all over again, and the anagogic begins, the romantic, and the tragic, and the comic. And a friend of mine at Boston College, who is a student of painting, has taken those categories of Frye with respect to literature and done the same thing with the history of painting from the Middle Ages down to the present time in the West, and shows how it goes through the same sort of thing. And so the kind of art that you're referring to is analogous on the painting level to the ironic at the level of literature, with the total breakdown of intelligibility in human relationships, the absurd, just absurd.
And the irony is that the vocabulary used to explain is conceptual.
Yes.
Yeah. Kind of image, language, the language
of image. See, it has to be conceptual. All language is conceptual. You know, it's an expression.
The irony being is that
Now, when he gave this lecture to us on art, I had seen the Chagall Museum in Nice. I had gone through it with a friend of mine, where Chagall's paintings on the Old Testament are present, and all the sketches that he did leading up to those, and some of the stained glass windows and so on. That's all anagogic art. And starting all over again with him, you see, but in a totally different context from the medieval anagogic art. It's being communicated now in symbols that are much more cross-cultural than the medieval was. It's an anagogic painting that is being done at a level that I think communicates to a wider aesthetic sensitivity than one that is as culturally determined, for instance, as was... who's the one that has all those Madonnas? Blonde Madonna.
Raphael?
No. Anyway, you know what I'm getting at. I mean, she was a Northern Italian woman, you see. Whereas now the art is being expressed in symbols that are culturally more pervasive or more extensive. And now what I want to do, I'd like to trace the history of theory from the Middle Ages down to the present time, and I think we can find the same thing. I think that in this is the structuralist, the death of humanity, Althusser and Derrida.
Why the Middle Ages?
That's the,
Why is the Middle Ages? That's the peak of the cycle.
It's a point where faith and culture are synthesized. In theory, in the philosophies of Albert Thomas or Bonaventure. In art, in literature, in Dante, for instance, and in art with the Raphael and so on.
I just wonder if it's a previous.
I imagine that probably, yeah.
Certainly.
And then the theory starting all over again today at the anagogic thing with cross-cultural, it was interiority analysis, cross-cultural interiority analysis. That's, I think it's more than an interesting speculation. Okay, so anyway, those would be the five elements, and that's as far as I wanted to get today, and we actually got there.
I do remember we have liturgy meetings on Thursdays from 1 to 2.